Welcome to the Center for Spiritual Living Bellingham podcast. We hope this message will be informative, inspirational, and helpful. Donations to support this work are greatly appreciated. Visit www.cslbellingham.org and click on the donate button. Remember to share our podcast. Thank you.
Well, good morning, everyone. My name's Philip Flores. I am one of the practitioners here at CSL Bellingham. We love to pray. That's what we do. That's what we've been trained for. And there's plenty of ways to contact us over here on the slide. There we go. So we have a prayer vessel. You can go online. Anybody else that's wearing a stole, approach them. And we're more than happy to provide you with spiritual support. So please join me in this opening invocation. There's only one. One love, one grace, one power, one spirit. And it is available each and every moment in each and every one of our lives. And I tap into that and allow it to operate in me, through me, and as me. And as we gather here this morning and listen to the inspirational words of Reverend Eric, I recognize that we are all in this together. Together in spirit, together in joy, together in love. So welcome to CSL Bellingham. And so it is.
Really a thrill to be here. It's so pretty. Isn't the Northwest, don't we just love it? Isn't it just great? I mean, you know, wherever people live, hopefully they love where they live. But I really love it here. So I want to start off with asking you, does anyone here besides me know that religious science teaches the concept of monism? Isn't it great? You're going to learn something new. You know how it is? You go to the service, and then later somebody asks you, what did the minister talk about? You can say, I learned what the word monism means. M-O-N-I-S-M. Monism means the concept of oneness, meaning that the creator and creation are one, as opposed to dualism. So there are certain religions or certain trends in certain religions where they teach that there is dualism, meaning there's God and the devil. That's dualism. There's the religion Zoroastrianism, and they teach that there is a God of good and a God of evil, and that both exist. So that's dualism. And there's certain strains of Hinduism that teach that the spiritual realm and the physical realm are separate from each other and sort of are at odds with each other. Okay? So that's not what we teach. We don't teach dualism. We teach monism. We believe that creator and creation are one. And it's embodied in that saying you may have heard, the spirit is as close to me as my jugular vein, that's actually from Islam. Okay, so in the Science of Mind textbook, on page 199, Ernest Holmes writes, we know that the belief in duality, a belief in the power of God and the power of evil, has helped to destroy humanity, and the understanding of unity alone will heal us. And this is pertinent. Why am I talking about unity? Why am I talking about monism? Because are we not experiencing our society as very divided? Okay, so we know that's an illusion. As Edwin Gaines says, we are not fooled by mere facts and appearances. Okay, so if you're drawn to that fear that we're divided, or you hear somebody else talking about how divided we are, don't be fooled, because that's an illusion. Okay? And in what we believe, Holmes wrote, we believe in God, the living spirit almighty, one indestructible, absolute, and self-existent cause. This one manifests itself in and through all creation, but is not absorbed by its creation. So even though they're all one, it's still greater than the creation, because it's the initiator. And the manifest universe is the body of God. People say, well, what does God look like? Has anyone ever looked at a picture from the Hubble telescope? Is it not incredible? Sometimes I think that our planet, our solar system, is simply a subatomic particle in an atom, in a cell of the thing itself. Like, we're so like this, and it's so huge. And I love that because it blows my mind. And it is that the universe, the manifest universe, is the logical and natural outcome of the infinite knowingness of God. And we believe in the individualization of the spirit within us, and that all people are individualizations, thank you very much, of the one spirit. So why does this matter, and why am I talking about this morning? Because my talk is living beyond limits. That's what I'm talking about today. Does anyone, would anyone here like to live beyond your perceived limitations? Oh, you like your limitations? Does anyone here want to live beyond your limitations? Okay, I want to know there's live bodies out there. Okay, so that's what I'm going to talk about, living beyond limits. And this is an essential part and project of this way of life. I mean, what's the name of our introductory course? Beyond Limits. Hello, it's not new. Okay. So I have lived my life so far in thinking, and I have to say, I received the invitation to speak here quite a while ago, and I have been thinking about this talk for a very long time. I've been sitting with it for a long time. And I came to realize that so far in my life, I've lived with three different cosmologies or worldviews. So the first one was the scientific worldview. My parents were religious. I wasn't raised in any religion whatsoever. I mean, nothing, for which I am so grateful. I mean, it's great. If you were raised in a religion, mazel tov, happy for you. But for me, it was so great that I wasn't raised in any religion, because I know a lot of folks in college, in my college days, who were struggling with, okay, this is a package of beliefs I was given, and what's true for me and what's not true for me. Anybody here go through that? Right. And I wasn't, I can't believe I'm going to say this. My consciousness was not polluted by anyone else's beliefs about religion. Okay? So as anytime I came across something that was true for me, it was very easy for me to embrace it. So my first worldview, having no thought of spirituality or anything beyond the material, was scientific. And as an agnostic atheist, I became to define myself as that once the subject came up in college. I believe that only that which is observable and quantifiable is real, and only the material is real, and all else is just supposition. So I had a scientific view of the world. That was the first. And then in college, the kind of earthquake happened in my consciousness, and I came out as a homosexual, came out as gay, and I got very involved in gay liberation, what was called the Gay Liberation Movement. I helped co-found the Gay Student Union at the University of Maryland, and I was all in, and my worldview became political. And so the lens that I viewed the world was through politics. And it wasn't just gay lib, it was, you know, all the liberation movements, feminism and civil rights and all kinds of lefty politics stuff. And I was very all in. And I moved to Seattle after college. I lived with three other gay men in a gay neighborhood, ran a gay business, helped organize the gay community. And like that was it, you know. And I did that for about 15 years and it was completely great. And then at the end of 15 years, I went, okay, now I know how to be gay. What is beyond that? Okay? And spirituality is what showed up perfectly at the time, you know, that I was done being professionally gay as a gay person. I was like, okay, what else is out there? Okay? And it was something that I really needed. And when I say I knew how to be gay, what I really mean is I understood that I was made this way, that it was perfect for me. I just have to tell you, being gay is really interesting. It's really interesting. I'm sort of in between the world of men and women is how I feel. And that's very interesting. So anyway, so being gay is really interesting. And I understood that if anyone had a problem with me being gay, it was absolutely and clearly their problem, not my problem. Amen?
Amen.
Okay, so that's why I say I didn't need to do that anymore. Okay. So during the last 30 years, spirituality is now the lens through which I view the world. And I want to say, I don't believe it's a superior view, okay? I think that the layers of the scientific worldview and the political worldview are all in the mix. I mean, we are religious
science.
Hello, we are religious
scientists.
Right? So I still love science. I'm still grateful for science. I believe that we live absolutely in an age of miracles. How many people here besides me would be dead without modern medicine? Look around. That's a lot of people that wouldn't be here. So I'm not saying having a spiritual lens is better than a scientific lens. And there are some people who have the scientific worldview. They don't believe in anything invisible. They don't believe in any spirituality. And they're really great people doing great stuff. And then there are people who have a religious worldview, and they're horrible people. They do terrible stuff. Right? So I'm not saying one is better than the other. I'm just speaking to an evolution. And obviously, I still have political viewpoints and political ideas and opinions and stuff. But truly, I look at every... I mean, I'm all in. I'm an ordained religious science minister. And actually, if you had told me growing up that I was going to become a minister, I would have said, you are out of your mind. So the joke's on me. And also our teaching, you know, it's in our teaching. What did Holmes describe our teaching as? It's the revelations of religion, the teachings of philosophy, and the findings of science. So they all belong. They all go together. I picked a really good religion. Amen?
Amen.
Haven't you picked a really good religion?
Yes.
Yes, you have. Okay. So I, you know, I appreciate all the different worldviews. And one of the big changes that has occurred during my spiritual journey is that I no longer need everyone to think like I do, act like I do, or believe what I believe. And that has not always been the case. Anybody else here suffer from that horrible disease where you really need people to be like you? Think like you, act like you, have the same, vote the way you vote. Do you have that disease? And it's your problem? It's not the world's problem? Yeah. And it makes you miserable? And it diminishes your joy in living? And it sets a boundary about around who is in your circle of who you can love and who you can't? And that's a limit that you are creating because you're a human being? Take a deep breath. Let go. It's okay. We all do it. Are you getting my message? Okay.
So subtle.
Yeah, so... sledgehammer today. And the thing is, I find that the more permission I give other people to be who they are, think like they think and act like they act, the more I'm actually giving myself permission. Like the limits that I remove from what other people can be, karma comes back around. Because I want freedom of choice. Now, some people want freedom from choice. Okay? For some people, the world is too big, it's too much, there's too much going on, there's too many choices, there's too many options. Just tell me what to do and how to do it, how to behave, how to get to heaven. Just give me a clear roadmap. That's what I want. And that is okay. Okay, it's not my way, but it's some people's way. Many years ago in Seattle, I used to drive to CSL Seattle, 14 years, and I would pass this big billboard for a born-again Christian community. And it said, black and white in a world of gray. And there was a big picture of an open Bible. And it's like, if you don't want to have any ambiguities and you want to know everything about everything, should you do this and not this, that was the church for you. And some people need that, and that is a great way to go. It's not my way, but it's the way some people want to go. This is actually now the completion of my big intro. Because now I'm going to talk about what I really want to talk about, which is transgender identity. I want to talk about the topic of transgender identity, okay? A few years ago, I did a talk series called Hot Topics, where I spent a month talking about abortion, immigration, guns, and January 6th. And it was a lot of fun, and it was very interesting, and nobody stomped out in a huff. Some ministers like to avoid political issues because they don't believe it's their job, or they don't want to upset people, or they don't want to be divisive, okay? And they feel like the community, Sunday worship, is a place that you come where you do not deal with those kinds of things, where you consider the higher things, you go above the divisions. That's what some ministers do. And that's great. That's what some ministers do. That's how they do it. I'm letting people do how they want to do it. Can you hear what I'm saying? Some people do that. Other ministers wear their politics on their sleeves and feel like it's cowardice and even immoral not to address the issues of the day. And they have some of them are very thriving, very successful congregations, ministries, where their politics are out there. We believe this and this and this and this. We vote this way. You should vote this way. Okay? Some do that. I'm really kind of Buddhist. I take the middle way. I don't want to not talk about things that are controversial, and I don't want to always talk about things that are controversial. And I only like to talk about these things from a spiritual standpoint. That's what I feel is what works for me because I have a spiritual lens on the world, and I believe that there is a spiritual solution to every challenge. Take a deep breath. So when I talked about abortion, I talked about it from a spiritual standpoint. When I talked about immigration, I talked about it from a spiritual standpoint. And I would prefer that you don't actually know for sure what I think, because I have no interest in or need for you to think what I think or believe what I believe. Okay? Because I trust you to make your own decisions and come to your own conclusions. Because I respect you as a spiritual being, and I don't need you to think what I think. But I hope by talking about the topic, I will bring a point of view that you haven't thought about, and it will serve you. Okay? Are you on my beam? Yes. Sound like fun? Yes. Transgender identity. What about that? Okay. The great Christian theologian Rob Bell famously gave a talk entitled, "Everything is Spiritual," and that's what I believe. Everything is spiritual. You know, to a political person, everything is political. What kind of car you drive is political. Whether you use the term Ms. or Miss or Mrs., remember that? Remember feminists? Remember when the idea of MS period was like they thought it was the end of civilization? So what does this have to do with transgender identities, trans rights, trans women in sports, and gender-altering medicine for teenagers? No matter where you stand on these issues, which have recently drawn a lot of attention and political debate and lawmaking, here are some things I offer up by way of a spiritual view of the topic. First of all, one of the most basic and biologically driven impulses in us as human beings is the sex drive, which means we are primordially driven to know whether the person in front of us is a man or a woman. That is biological. It's really at the root. We need to know which sex you are so I can figure out how I'm going to relate to you because I'm a sexual being, okay? So I have a great sympathy with people who are fearful of gender ambiguity. So if you're looking at a person, and I have this delicious experience these days where I'm out in the public somewhere and I'm looking at a person and I'm like, I cannot tell. Okay, I really want to know, is that a man or a woman? Okay, I go to the store, the grocery clerk, I'm looking and I can't tell. and I really want to know. And for some people, that is threatening. That is challenging. It's deeply uncomfortable. It shakes them to their core. Okay? And what is our response to someone who is, what's the spiritual response to someone who is shaken to their core? Compassion, love, patience, understanding. Okay? And patience and love and understanding for a person who is really struggling with this issue is compassion. That's the only spiritual response. Everybody take a deep breath. Let it go. Second point, is creation limited? If all is one proceeding forth from the one mind and the one being and the one consciousness, did anyone give the infinite a memo saying this or that is off limits? I mean, is there anyone in this room or in the halls of Congress who has the power to tell the spirit what it should be or should not be creating? No. I mean, did anyone consult with the power back of all creation on the subject of fire, flood, tornadoes, or earthquakes? No. We do not get to decide those things. So gender ambiguity, that's a real, if you want to rein all that in, good luck. Okay, third point. Isn't human nature and human experience full of contradictions and ambiguities?
Yes.
Yes. Does everyone fit into a neat box?
No.
Do you fit in a neat box?
No.
Okay. So there's contradictions and there's ambiguities in all of us, and it goes with the territory. And we could be compassionate and patient with ourselves and with others when life forces us to confront our ambiguities. You know? I mean, you say that you want world peace, and you fantasize killing the politician you don't like. To name one. Here's another one. The surface of the earth is continuous. Only we have put up border lines. Okay? So we go, so in reality, however, there are fish that fly. I mean, Ken and I, our first vacation in Hawaii, we took one of those day boat trips, and we're going along, and this school of fish just leap out of the water. And it was the most thrilling. It's just so thrilling to me. I just went, evolution! And there are birds that can only swim in the water. So there are fish that can fly, and there are birds that can only swim in the water. There's a duck-billed platypus. Now get this. It has a duck's bill, webbed feet, and lays eggs. But it has fur and nurses its young with milk from its body. So which is it? Is it a bird or a mammal? Is it a bird or a mammal? Is it a bird or a mammal? Is this plot of land Russia or Ukraine? Is this book fiction or nonfiction? Are you going to eat the last cookie or not? We have to know. Okay? What spirituality teaches us is patience and an appreciation for mystery. If you already knew and understood everything there is to know about this plane of existence, you wouldn't still be here. The second that you as a soul are completely bored with this plane, amen?
Amen.
Okay, another point. Do you know any transgendered people? Okay, there are, in my observation, there are people who are weighing in on this topic who have never spoken to, never met, and don't know a transgendered person. You can read a whole book about hiking the Appalachian Trail, but that is not the same as hiking the Appalachian Trail. If you want to talk about the Appalachian Trail, what you say will have more authority and be more useful and probably more accurate if you have actually hiked the trail.
Yes.
So otherwise, your opinions are always secondhand. Now, I want to tell you about a transgendered person I know. I'm a big fan of her. She's a Christian minister, and she began life as Paul Williams. And she was the CEO of 5 very important born-again Christian organizations, a TV show, a TV station, a huge church, had a counseling practice. And this person, as Paul Williams, was the counselor, the therapist to many megachurch pastors, and had spoken at all the major megachurches, congregations in the country, and told me that, in her opinion, 98% of them are psychopaths. And she's a licensed psychotherapist. And to be a psychopath is a great way to have a lot of charisma. Because a psychopath says, this is it. This is how it is. And for people who are troubled by the ambiguities and the gray areas of life, a strong personality who tells you everything and how it is very attractive, right? So of course psychopaths would wind up, that would be a great career for a psychopath. Okay. Anyway, so Paul Williams, knowing that he was transgender or identified as a woman, finally after marriage and kids and hugely successful, he was also the CEO of the Oak Tree Group, which is the biggest church planting organization in the country, came out as transgender, and within a month, maybe even a week, had been fired from all those jobs. And thousands of people who were friends would not speak to him any longer. And now she is thriving as a woman, and I would recommend her TED Talk, I've Lived as a Man and a Woman, Here's What I've Learned, which has been viewed millions of times, and it's fantastic. So that, if you don't know a transgender person, it would be great to watch Paula Stone Williams' TED Talk. Okay, just a couple more things. Is it possible that the current debate about transgender rights is the logical and natural outcome of what has gone in American society over generations, and that this is a worthy and worthwhile issue to struggle over? Like, it's a great topic to debate, and its time has come, and that's not a problem. Could it be that the current struggle over transgender issues is a good thing? Okay. I know it's good for me or you or society to couch public debate. It's not good to couch these issues in hatred or closed-mindedness. It's not good spiritual practice to demonize other people. So if you're anti-trans and you're demonizing trans people, that's not good for you. And if you are for trans rights and you're demonizing people who are against trans rights, that's not good for you. Amen? Okay. Everybody has arrived at their opinions based on their experience or lack of it. Everybody is trying to do the best they know how to do all the time about everything. And this is pertinent to you as you're driving down the road, you're waiting too long in the line in the grocery store, you're living with someone. Anybody here besides me live with another person? It's really good to remember everybody's doing the best they know how to do all the time. This talk is totally about you, even if you are not transgender. One of the greatest changes I've witnessed. Oh, and finally, do we have faith? We will work this out and do the right thing. Martin Luther King Jr. said, the moral arc of the universe is long, but it bends towards justice. One of the greatest changes I've witnessed in my life is the transformation of public opinion about gays and lesbians. I mean, it went from violence against gays and lesbians was normal and natural and not questioned. That's where it was when I was in the closet as a teenager. And today, I'm married to my husband, and none of us in Gay Lib ever imagined that there would be gay marriage. We didn't even want gay marriage. We were like, we don't want to be like straight people. Right? And so I have to thank the straight majority, because we wouldn't have gay marriage without you. So I applaud you. Thank you all. And when transgender people being about 1.6% of the population, it's going to take all of us together to resolve this issue. Amen? Okay. So you may be thinking, I'm not transgender. What does this have to do with me? I submit that it has everything to do with you. As a woman, are you afraid of or challenged by the maleness within you? As a man, are you uncomfortable with the feminine inside yourself? This is an issue that's up for us as a species. Everything going on in your world is just another opportunity to become more awake, more conscious, less indifferent to the suffering of others. You know, people can't live with them, can't live without them. Right? Yeah. In the yin-yang symbol, there's a white dot in the middle of the black tadpole, and there's a black dot in the middle of the white tadpole. Okay? Monism. Right? Everything is one, everything is... So in the reality, all is mixed, and you will have a better life. You will live beyond limits. You will live beyond your own limits if you allow the things, the issues of life that come up for you to allow you to step beyond illusory boundaries, because it's a big, wide, ambiguous, juicy fruit and nut bar, this life we are living. Yes? All right. Thank you for listening.